Hello and welcome to another episode of the Permaculture Podcast with Scott Mann. Today's episode is What to Look For When Looking for a Permaculture Design Course. Before we begin, though, head out to your favorite podcast site and leave a review of the show. It'll help get the word out there. Also, stop by thepermaculturepodcast.com. I've got new updates going up a couple times a week on interesting videos, news and information about permaculture, training classes, whatever I can find to get up there. Lastly, if you have any questions, comments, or concerns that you'd like to direct to me, my address is show@thepermaculturepodcast.com. Now then, if you've been listening to the show for a while, I did an episode like this a while back in response to a listener question, but having recently attended my permaculture teacher training, part of that class was reviewing what should go into a course, what to expect, and how to ensure that your instructor is acting ethically and honestly. Because of that, I wanted to produce this new show on this topic. Regretfully, one of my concerns in the world of permaculture is that because the permaculture design course is easy to get, if you can afford the time and money for the class, ultimately it serves as the entryway to teaching this material, calling yourself a permaculturist, and acting professionally in this manner. And when you combine that with the itinerant nature of many instructors, and I've heard stories of teachers who put together a class or two and then disappear, there can be some confusion on what to expect. What should be in the class? What shouldn't be? What counts towards the 72-hour curriculum and what doesn't? In the end, this show is by no means exhaustive, but it can serve as a general guideline, especially for someone who hasn't passed beyond the threshold into the permaculture world by having taken a permaculture design course or attended some workshops. The general points that I want to cover in this episode are: ask for the teacher's name or names. Ask for the teacher's course history and former instructors. Ask what their projects are. Also, consider how long the class is. Check what materials included in the class curriculum. If you have any questions about a textbook that they're using, some notes on that. A couple of buyer beware moments. And that there are no permaculture police, which is one of the reasons why this episode's important to me, because you have to make these judgments on your own. So then, ask for the teacher's names. I've seen some listings that don't list the instructor's names, or they have simply to be determined, or TBD, in the listing. Usually, if a class is well prepared, the organizer should know who the teachers will be well in advance. If not, then they may not have lined up teachers because they don't know if they're going to get enough interest to pull off the class and will be lining it up later. It's a place where I'd be a little bit concerned. However, if the listing for the course includes one or two of the teachers' names plus just guest instructors, that generally seems to be all right. Many times they're going to be pulling members of the community or other permaculturists who might just be traveling through into the course to teach a module or two. Next, ask for the teacher's course history and former instructors. The instructors I've had were all open to talking about not only what classes they've taken, but also which ones they've taught and who their instructors were. In two cases, they also discussed their, if you will, permaculture lineage that connected them from the current moment in time when I was in the class all the way back through their instructors to the very beginning with Bill Mollison. And that gave me an idea of who they learned from, and as I've come to understand recently, getting an idea of who they learned from can also give you an idea of what their style is going to be like, and also why the course material is presented the way that they do. In my permaculture design course, my instructors were very ethic and principle-focused. So that's where I come from when I'm looking at this material. The principles are what come first to me, but another instructor may be more interested in working with a site assessment up front from the very beginning. As another example of my own life on this topic, I'm gladly going to tell you that I earned my permaculture design certificate from Dylan Naber and Ben Wise, and that it was their first full PDC taught together. And that from that point forward, I've had further training in teaching permaculture with Jude Hobbs, Andrew Millison, and Rico Zook, as some of you may have already heard in my teacher training review. And I've also given some What is Permaculture presentations to local organizations, including a local college. I've been invited to participate in a local EcoFest as a presenter, and additionally, my work has included workshops on things like rain harvesting, rain barrels, and vermiculture. I want you to have confidence in me as I share this information with you and as you follow along with me on this journey, and I think that as a student, you should demand no less accountability from your instructors to share that information with you, again, so you can get an idea of where they're coming from and be able to have a clear picture of their involvement in permaculture and the larger permaculture community. Which is why I say that you should also ask, what are their projects? I mean, what permaculture work are they doing? As I've been reminded again and again, we need to be out there doing the work of designing, planning, and seeing things through. Now, granted, given the nature of this process between design and implementation, they might not have a large number of projects completed, but see what their portfolio of design work looks like. If they've taught permaculture design courses before, what have their students' designs look like? And I say this because the number of designs that get implemented are, from what I've gathered, no more than about 25%. You know, about a 1 in 4 gets completed, and for some folks it's probably a lot lower than that. So don't be surprised if the portfolio of design work includes a lot of designs that haven't gotten done, that body of work is much larger than the on-the-ground projects. I've also found out recently that there are also some designers who become residential or on-site designers, so they're going to be working with the same site intensively for many years. I very much fall into this latter category because of my time requirements. Trying to get this show out, having a family and everything else, I only have so many hours to devote to this process, so I'm doing it on the land I live in and with this urban agriculture project. So with the time that I have, those are the two projects that I'm spending my time on. And it's all going to depend just on what that person is able to do, but make sure that they're doing some work. When it comes to the course itself, how long is the class? A permaculture design course, at a minimum, is going to take around 10 days, and that short timeline will be a lot of long days, where you're really going through just a lot of material, and you're hammering it, and you're hammering it, and you're hammering it, but it is doable. Over 10 days, if you're in class 9 to 10 hours a day, you can get that 72 hours of instruction in, plus the final design presentation. And it should be 72 hours of instruction. As I learned in my recent teacher training, this is in the classroom and is based around the core curriculum originally defined in permaculture, a designer's manual by Mollison. And those 72 hours shouldn't include any work on the final design project or material outside of the curriculum, such as teaching to the local bioregion, unless it's in addition to the 72-hour core curriculum. Now, when it comes to that 72 hours, there is some discussion about whether or not field trips, particularly when they include taking you to a guest instructor, should count towards the 72 hours of instruction. In my conversations, I'm inclined to say that if they provide a learning moment, a field trip should count towards the 72 hours if it relates to the curriculum, with an understanding that field trips should only be a minor portion of the overall experience. Another reference is Rosemary Morrow in her book, Earth User's Guide to Permaculture Teacher's Notes, which you can get fairly inexpensively shipped from the Permaculture Activist website. I think I paid $22 or $23 for mine to my door. Great book to have if you're going to be teaching permaculture or you'd really like a great course outline. Anyway, in her book, she states that a course will be about 60 hours of instruction and 12 hours of excursions, field trips. So she has some leeway, and there's no way that I'm going to say to Rosemary Morrow that she's wrong. I agree with her. And just as this 72 hours of instruction represents the minimums, there are really no maximums on how long you can spend in a permaculture design course. I've of course heard of the permaculture design courses as short as 10 days, though a typical range seems more to be in about 12 to 14 days to give you some time. Though I've also heard of permaculture design courses that run 35 days. And in any of these classes, the level of intensity can vary, whether you're sitting there just hammering material, hammering material, hammering material, like in a lecture setting, or whether or not it's more of a salon style, where you're sitting back and you're having conversations and discussing the material. And when it comes to the format of the course, it may be something that's a residential class, where you go on site and live there for the time that you're taking the class. It might be an expanded weekend course like I took, which might be something like every weekend for 5 or more weeks, 1 weekend a month for 6 months, 1 day a month for a year. Maybe it's 1 weekend a month for a year to give you lots of time. It doesn't matter as long as it meets that 72 hour of instruction. Choose whatever type works for you and don't worry about it otherwise. Just be concerned about that 72 hours of instruction. So, you found a course, looks like it's going to have those 72 hours. What material is included in the class curriculum? As I already mentioned, you can check out Rosemary Morrow's book if you'd like a nice, solid listing of what you can expect. Otherwise, this is a hard one to discuss because of just how much can be in there. And the final organization, the way that it breaks down, the way that modules are named, is up to the instructor. As I said, my class started with ethics and principles and moved forward. I've heard of others that begin with site assessment and others who like to start with water. It's going to vary a great deal. So rather than try and outline every possibility, I'd like to point you to the Permaculture Institute USA's Permaculture Design Course Outline. If you go to permaculture.org and search for Course Outline, you'll find it. As always, I'll include a link to it directly in the show notes so you can go download it and look through it. It's a pretty meaty reader and works as a pretty good primer on permaculture if you're not real familiar with it. If you want something to just give to a friend who wants to know more and is interested in reading a pretty decent document, this is a good one. Overall, that document gives you a rough idea of what should be included, and is one reason why you might ask for a copy of the syllabus for a class that you're interested in, and compare that material against the PI USA course outline, Rosemary Morrow's book. You can contact me if you have any questions, send me a link to it, I can go check it out and just give you an idea of what I think. If there are some variations between what you have and what you're finding in this other material, or if the syllabus isn't nearly as detailed as some of these other outlines, don't be surprised. Again, because of the variety that exists, if you're not really familiar with the material, it might not all line up, but you'll have a decent idea of whether or not the two line up. When it comes to textbooks and asking the question of what textbook should be used in the course, this has changed a lot in the last couple of years because of all the great material that's being released on permaculture. Between Rosemary Morrow's book, which I believe is in the second edition now, Toby Hemingway's Gaia's Garden, Holmgren's Permaculture Principles and Pathways Beyond Sustainability, and the others that are coming to market, there isn't a clear answer on what should be used. There was a time when Mollison's Permaculture Designer's Manual was the only real option, and from what I understand, some people seem to consider that to still be the case because of how much material is in there. Though, of course, some of the things that we use now in permaculture don't exist in there, so there's an argument for either one of the modern writers of permaculture to take that material and update it with everything that we've learned and perhaps release a new designer's manual, or just to go with one of these other texts. And, of course, as these field of options are growing, your class may have no textbook at all, but rather just include notes, handouts, resources, and other material. Don't let the textbook, or lack thereof, be a deterrent to a class. But if you have questions about it, again, ask the instructor. Why have they chosen this book? Why didn't they choose something else? If they're not using a book, what other resources are they going to provide to ensure that you have enough material? And that brings us to probably my most dreaded topic on this, the buyer beware. And these are just some general remarks on my part, and they're not related particularly to the material above, but are just warnings about things to look for when you find a class. If you find a course and they require any kind of a non-refundable deposit that's a fraction of the class fee, say a couple of $100, don't be too surprised. I wouldn't be too concerned if they're asking for $200 or $300 up front that's not refundable, or if there's like a $50 application fee, if you will. This isn't something sketchy, but rather a commitment that you're going to be to the class. And it helps to defray the costs if a student drops out at the last minute. By the time you set up a venue, advertise to the class, and pay all the other fees that come with it, like insurance and all, it adds up pretty quickly. And if you have a few students drop out at the very end, it can make the difference for the instructor on whether or not they're going to make a profit, particularly if they're setting all this up out of their own pocket. And if you're dealing with a decent teacher, most of these fees will probably be refunded if you have a conversation with them, and it's a true emergency, but I can't guarantee that. So, yeah, don't sweat it if they want some money up front to hold your spot or whatever. Ask them why it's there, and if there is any kind of a refund policy or a cancellation policy. Beware, however, if any course requires you to pay the fee in full up front with no refund. I don't know if it's just me, but it doesn't seem right in any way, shape, or form to have to pay, you know, $1,000 or more and then have something come up that you can't make it and be completely out of that money. I mentioned the cancellation policy about your refunds. If a class doesn't have enough students, they may need to cancel it. As I mentioned with my first teacher training that I was trying to attend, they only had 3 students sign up. It just didn't work for them, didn't meet their numbers. Hey, no sweat off my back. I'm glad that they didn't try to put it on and burden themselves in some way. But it's good to know up front what's going to happen if this occurs. And also to find out how long before the class starts will they let people know whether it's going to be held or if they need to cancel it. This can really help make your travel plans more concrete. And I've seen some classes that recommend that you don't buy your travel tickets until 2 weeks before the class, just because of something like this. And I know in my case, when I was looking for tickets, buying a month ahead of the class versus buying 2 weeks before the class was a difference of like $250, which is one reason why, even if they say not to buy it ahead of time, I recommend buying ticket insurance if you can, especially if you're going to be spending hundreds and hundreds of dollars on your tickets to fly, so that if something happens, you can get a full refund, less the cost of the insurance, if you need to cancel your trip. I think I paid less than $40 total for my insurance on my cross-continental flights for my teacher training. And it's well worth the cost if something happened either to the class or myself that I couldn't go. I'm out $40 rather than hundreds. So check that out. Consider it an option. One other kind of sketchy thing to look for when you're signing up for a class is if there are any rules for which you can be asked to leave the class. In most cases, these are no big deal. It's, you know, illicit drug use, bullying, being violent towards others, failing to recognize others' space or privacy, and so on. Those things, they make sense to me for why you could be asked to leave a class. However, if there's some kind of a blanket statement that you can be asked to leave at any time for any reason, especially if it's combined with some kind of a draconian deposit or refund rules where they say something like, if you're asked to leave the class, no refund will be provided, I'd take some time to consider that choice. I mean, you may just be having a bad day and be a little bit surly, and next thing you know it's, well, we're going to have to ask you to leave. What about my refund? Are we going to prorate that? Am I going to get anything back? No, I'm sorry. You came to this class and agreed to the rules that there were no refunds. So you're going to have to leave, and we're going to keep your money. I don't really fly for that. So check it. Be aware of it. But again, if they ask you to sign some kind of a memorandum of agreement about how the course is going to be structured and what the expectations are, don't be surprised if you're asked to do something like that. But just read over it and make sure there's nothing in there that makes you go, this doesn't seem right. Because one of the things that these days kind of feels like an issue in the permaculture world is that there are no permaculture police. Even with all these questions and details that I've thrown out there, there's nobody who's going to come and take a certificate away from you if you get one through a less than stellar permaculture design course or one that missed some material. And in the same way, if there's a bad teacher, there's nobody who's out there who's going to say, hey, we can't let you teach this material and call it permaculture. You're giving the industry a bad name. You're giving us a bad name. That kind of a formal structure doesn't exist right now. And given the way that Mollison and Holmgren have written about wanting to get this material out there in the open and get it shared, I don't know that it's going to happen. So beware. Do this research. Check things out. And one of the issues with this kind of stuff is that with how much material is out there, it's not surprising if you miss a chunk. I've looked through several syllabuses, talked to some folks I know, and we realized that, hey, we missed something here, either because a module wasn't labeled the same as another instructor, or because the material was presented differently, or we just missed it because of the way it was integrated with something else, so that it didn't come across as clearly as we might have had with another instructor. A great example from my recent life is while working on a presentation on the third ethic of permaculture with some folks. Sometimes this is called the limit population consumption ethic, other times it's fair shares. Some other folks call it share the surplus. The group I was in, we actually had to stop what we were doing and go, okay, I know the ethic this way. How do you know it? How do you know it? Okay, so each of us know this a little bit differently. We discussed how it was taught to us and then worked out what the common agreement was between us on what the meaning of the third ethic would be for that particular presentation. It took us a moment, though, and made us realize just how different our educations were, even though we had gone through what ostensibly is the same basic course. Last part of this. If you have any questions about a class that you're going through, please feel free to ask me any questions, anytime, about a permaculture design course and instructor. I'm not likely to say yes or no on anyone because I think that that's unfair to them, especially if I don't know them. If I know them, and I like what they're doing, I'll give them a stellar review. And you're going to hear about it at the show. You're going to find an interview with them. You'll find an article from me that's really promoting this person because I like them. If it's someone who I don't know about, I'm just going to help guide you through these questions. Or if I know their name and I know somebody else who they worked with, I can possibly point you to this other person so you can ask some questions and find out more. I'm always available in one way or another through email, at show@thepermaculturepodcast.com, via phone. You can call me 717-798-8100. It's my office number, not always around, but feel free to leave a voicemail and I'll give you a call back if I can reach you. Or I'll send you an email, so please, if you leave voicemail, leave your email address. Speak slowly, clearly, spell anything out that you think I might have a problem with. My hearing is not as great as it used to be. Or stop by the show, leave a comment, and I can get back to you. I'm not going to say that I am, by any stretch of the imagination, an expert on all the ins and outs of permaculture and permaculture courses, but it is something that I'm involved in, constantly working, reading, researching, and networking with others. If you're listening to this show, you have an idea of who I am, what I'm like, and what it is that I'm doing. And I open myself to you for anything that you need in this world of permaculture. Because in the end, permaculture is still an open, broad field in many areas of the world. It's not strictly codified, and it's up to you to decide whether or not any class, teacher, or experience is worth being considered as part of your permaculture design course, any workshops, classes, or advanced courses that you might take. And I hope that these notes from my research, conversations, and experiences will help make that decision easier and more fulfilling for you. When you make it on the other side of the course, go forth, do good work, and build your own reputation. Let your name stand on its own. Until the next time, take care of the earth, yourself, and each other.